family operates and how the Muslim family conduct its business with the neighbors, with the kids, with the school teachers, and with their guest, him, if he come and stay with us at home to watch us rather than to listen to the mainstream media. Because, you know, the mainstream media in the U.S., they picture the Muslims as terrorists. And the mainstream media in the Middle East, they picture the European and the Western among them, the Americans, as infidels. So here comes the duty of Muslim peacemaker teams when the Muslim peacemaker teams bring both together, the infidel and the terrorist, halfway, have them sit in a round table, look in the eyes, break that piece of bread, share it, and they find out all that nonsense of terrorism or infidels has no values, but they are nothing but brothers and sisters in humanity. And they should pursue this concept, that peaceful concept, to respect each other and share what they have together.
Sami Verzuli, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Beloved Iraqi-American restaurateur in Minneapolis who moved back to Iraq after the U.S. invasion, founded the Muslim Peacemaker Team, and now is back in Minneapolis 20 years later. Someday soon, I hope to come to Minneapolis and...
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month only, the Governance and Policy Committee will meet on Thursday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. instead of the third Thursday. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if the meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, Mayor Ted Wheeler wants to use unhoused Portlanders to pressure others into shelters.
New Arkansas legislation restricts trans kids.
And, in international news, Russia bombs a dorm in Ukraine.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2023. I'm Ashley Mackey.
And I'm Josh Salem. Mayor Ted Wheeler wants to use previously houseless Portlanders to convince people living outside to move into shelters. He also wants their help in deciding who should be penalized for refusing to do so. The Portland City Council aims to ban homeless camping by 2024. Wheeler plans to create six large outdoor tent encampments for unhoused Portlanders to move into. Now, there's a preliminary compliance program designed to persuade people who are camping outside to move into an indoor shelter or one of the city's planned outdoor tent encampments without involving the police. The proposal says, quote, "At its core, this system is intended to incentivize and support people into shelter without criminal sanctions, and to remove barriers that contribute to cycles of homelessness," end quote. A draft was emailed to several local elected officials earlier this month. The proposal recommends the mayor appoint a community board composed of outreach staff, peer volunteers, and social service providers. The board will review cases in which houseless people refuse to move into a city-run encampment or other indoor shelters. It will be empowered to offer moving incentives ranging from providing bus passes to clearing active arrest warrants. Stephanie Howard is the mayor's public safety policy advisor. Howard says, quote, Our outreach teams right now can offer people immediate transportation to shelter or other services. But where those services are declined, that's difficult. What we're envisioning is targeted outreach that is tailored to the specific needs of that person, end quote.
At present, Portlanders living outside usually learn that they have to move when the city posts a neon flyer near their tents, warning that the camp will soon be taken down. That posting can be followed by a site visit by a city outreach worker prior to the sweep. The new outreach team will be different because it will routinely follow up with people who decline services. And in the new scenario, outreach workers will be able to penalize those who don't accept what the city is offering. The board is empowered to instruct the city to give an unhoused person a criminal citation for public camping if they refuse to move after 30 days. This citation can result in a fine of up to $100 or can include a jail sentence of up to 30 days. Howard calls these penalties a last resort. She says they have held regular meetings with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office to discuss ways that unhoused people could have warrants and criminal records cleared in exchange for agreeing to move into a shelter. The District Attorney's Office is still reviewing the city's draft compliance proposal, and it has not agreed to create any new systems. The mayor's proposal wants people with experience being homeless to serve on that community board. Local outreach organizations for houseless persons argue that the city is misusing a trusted model to manipulate homeless Portlanders. PDX Saints Love, a nonprofit that connects people living outside with needed social services, says the city's plan to use peers who have experienced houselessness to pressure unhoused people to accept services would be harmful by destroying trust. They also feel the city's planned 150-person outdoor tent encampments are not a safe alternative for the houseless. It says clustering such a large group is dangerous, and there are concerns about protecting people living in tents from extreme weather. The proposal says outreach workers will collect specific data on people who refuse the city services and note which housing options they declined. The city has not said what it intends to do with this data.
Clackamas County won't spend state funds to purchase a Quality Inn to turn into transitional housing. That's a reversal of a previous 3-2 vote to use funds from Oregon's Project Turnkey to change abandoned hotels and motels into shelters for the homeless. County Chair Tootie Smith abruptly called a meeting to reverse her vote on the plan, even though none of the money for buying the shelter or operating it would come from the county. The purchase of the Quality Inn will not go forward. Governor Tina Kotek voiced her displeasure at the reversal, telling Willamette Week, quote, "I'm absolutely stunned by Chair Smith's reversal today. Project Turnkey is a proven model to help Oregonians move off the streets and into stability. This sudden vote was a very disappointing step backward at a time when every leader in Oregon needs to be doing more, not less, to address our homelessness crisis," end quote. County staff had worked for nearly 2 years to secure a Project Turnkey site for the county. The project was created by the Oregon legislature in 2020. In fewer than 7 months, the first iteration of the project created 19 new shelters in 13 counties. That amounted to a 20% increase in supply of shelter beds across the state.
A coalition of governments in western Umatilla County has proposed placing a homeless camp in a former gravel pit. The land is located in an isolated industrial area between Hermiston and Umatilla. It borders a 4-lane highway and is not connected to water or sewer services. It's only accessible by car and is miles away from any stores. Last year, the nonprofit Stepping Stones Alliance joined with the cities of Hermiston, Umatilla, Stanfield, and Echo, plus Umatilla County, to start Project PATH, Practical Assistance Through Housing. PATH is a transitional housing project that represents a major expansion of local homeless services in an area where resources can be limited. Stepping Stones found a potential site within the city of Hermiston, but it was met with strong opposition from residents in the area. The former gravel pit will need to have a well drilled for water and a septic system. The Oregon State Historic Preservation Office is requiring a review for indigenous artifacts before groundwork can begin. The Stepping Stones director, Jezelyn Cole, says PATH represents big dreams for the people of the area.
United School District workers go on strike in Los Angeles. Democrats want to crack down on tax avoidance. And a federal judge blocks parts of a California handgun law. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are working on and showing the district what solidarity looks like. Solidarity with students, with parents, and with each other.
Service Employees International Union Local 99 President Conrado Guerrero says a three-day strike among workers for the Los Angeles Unified School District is just the beginning, unless district officials can negotiate contracts in good faith. Teachers joined picket lines with tens of thousands of bus drivers, custodians, and cafeteria workers, demanding 30% wage increases, more full-time work, and more staffing for students in the nation's second-largest school system. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is urging the Treasury Department to crack down on the ultra-wealthy's use of trusts to avoid paying their fair share in taxes.
If you have $5 billion, do you really need to step on people in order to get another $5 billion? How much money do these people need?
Sanders says transfer taxes like the estate tax and gift tax help fund public infrastructure for all Americans, but the ultra-wealthy are using increasingly complex tax planning to hoard billions of dollars. Former President Donald Trump remained in Florida Tuesday as officials in New York City prepared for possible protests, which could follow his indictment on alleged hush money payments. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says city officials are monitoring comments on social media.
The NYPD is doing their normal role of making sure that there's no inappropriate actions in the city.
Meanwhile, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy attempted to downplay the legal case against Trump, saying it involved personal money.
And I think in your heart of hearts, you know, too, that you think this is just political. And I think that's what the rest of the country thinks, and we're kind of tired of that.
A lawyer for the former president said any indictment would mean all-out war. A federal judge has blocked key provisions of a California law restricting the sale of new handguns in the state. California Attorney General Rob Bonta says the state's Unsafe Handgun Act saves lives.
California has among the strongest gun safety laws in the nation, and we have one of the lowest firearm mortality rates in the nation. That is not dumb luck.
The court ruled the law's requirements are unconstitutional. Voters in Wisconsin began casting ballots Tuesday in the state's Supreme Court election, which will determine majority control. The court is expected to soon take on the state's controversial abortion ban from 1849. Meanwhile, the Oklahoma Supreme Court has overturned a portion of the state's near-total ban on abortion, ruling women have a right to abortion when pregnancy risks their health, not just in a medical emergency. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The Arkansas governor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, signs a law prohibiting transgender people in public schools from using the restroom that matches their gender identity. The Arkansas law takes effect later this summer. It applies to multi-person restrooms and locker rooms at public schools and charter schools from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. Many fear it will be followed by an even stricter Arkansas bill criminalizing transgender adults using public restrooms that match their gender identity. North Carolina had its own bathroom law 6 years ago, but repealed it in the wake of widespread protests and boycotts. More than two dozen bathroom bills have been filed in 17 states, according to the Human Rights Campaign. Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund said, quote, they are singling out transgender people for no other reason than dislike, disapproval, and misunderstanding of who transgender youth are, and the entire school population suffers as a result of these types of bills, particularly schools and teachers and administrators who are dealing with real problems and need to focus on creating a welcome environment for every student, end quote. Other anti-transgender bills in the United States aim to ban or limit gender-affirming care for minors, prevent transgender girls from participating in school sports, and restricting drag shows. At least two federal appeals courts have upheld transgender students' right to use the bathroom corresponding with their gender identity. However, a federal appeals court ruling upheld a similar policy at a Florida school district last year.
The new Arkansas law does require schools to provide reasonable accommodations, including single-person restrooms. Opponents say the legislation doesn't provide funding for schools that may need to build single-person restrooms to provide those accommodations. Governor Sanders also approved legislation making it easier to sue those who provide gender-affirming care to minors. That law represents an effort to effectively reinstate a ban on such care for minors that had been blocked by a federal judge. Sanders also signed an education bill that prohibits classroom instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation before fifth grade, similar to Florida's Don't Say Gay law. The bill signed by the Republican governor makes Arkansas the fourth state to place similar restrictions on public schools. Bills in Idaho and Iowa currently await their governor's signature. Similar laws have been enacted in Alabama, Oklahoma, and Tennessee, although lawsuits have been filed challenging the Oklahoma and Tennessee restrictions.
Insulin price caps do not protect everyone needing the drug. Mark Moran has more on the story from the Iowa News Service.
Drug maker Sanofi has joined two other large manufacturers in capping monthly insulin prices at $35. In Iowa, advocates for more affordable health care say it's encouraging news, but they want state lawmakers to mandate the price limit for everyone who needs insulin. Three major manufacturers are capping insulin prices for people with private insurance and for Medicare Part D recipients. For people who don't have either and are on plans regulated by the state, insulin prices can vary dramatically. AARP Iowa State Director Brad Anderson says that uncertainty leaves a lot of Iowans vulnerable.
Here in Iowa, at the state level, there's still around 250,000 Iowans on health insurance plans that are regulated by the state where their insulin is not capped at $35 per month.
Anderson says the new drug company price caps are a step in the right direction, but he points out that the companies could decide to change or lift the caps at any time. He says only a state law would end the uncertainty. Anderson says there's still some question over whose insulin costs are capped and whose are not, which only adds to the confusion. AARP Iowa is pushing for price cap uniformity for anyone who needs the drug.
We want to pass a law at the state level saying that regardless of whether you're on Medicare or if you're on a plan regulated by the state health insurance commissioner, your insulin is capped at $35 a month.
AARP says insulin costs have risen 600% over the past 20 years, and 14% of Americans who use insulin say it consumes at least 40% of their available income. Insulin price caps are part of AARP Iowa's legislative agenda, but a bill has not yet been introduced. For Iowa News Service, I'm Mark Moran.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Activist Radio. Then at 7, the KBOO premiere of Progressive PDX with Sherry Morish. Tonight's weather will be overcast with occasional showers. The low will be 42. Tomorrow's weather shows rain to be likely. The high will be 45. Today in history, in 1933, Nazi Germany opened the Dachau concentration camp, first of its kind. The quote of the day is from Anne Frank, who hid from the Nazis in a secret annex in the Netherlands for 2 years before being discovered. Ms. Frank said, "Despite everything, I believe people are really good at heart."
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky posted video today showing what he says is a Russian missile destroying an apartment building in the southeastern city of Zaporizhzhia. The blast killed at least one person. Russia also launched exploding drones that killed seven other people at a student dormitory near Kyiv. Two children were wounded, at least 25 people went to the hospital, and three were in critical condition. Zelensky said, quote, "Russia is shelling the city with bestial savagery. Residential areas where ordinary people and children live are being fired at," end quote. He appealed for countries to increase pressure on Russia to stop the war. Russia has denied targeting residential areas, even though military strikes appear to be hitting apartment buildings and civilian infrastructure on a daily basis. Earlier today, an overnight drone attack partially destroyed a high school and two dormitories south of the Ukrainian capital. Just hours earlier, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida left Kyiv after meeting Zelensky in a show of support for Ukraine. He called Russia's invasion a, quote, disgrace that undermines the foundations of the international legal order, end quote. A Russian official claimed the building was hit by a Ukrainian air defense missile that was launched to intercept a Russian missile. Russian officials have blamed Ukrainian air defenses for many deadly strikes on apartments. Russia says the deployment of air defense systems in residential areas puts civilians at risk. Russia and China issued a joint statement asking for others to, quote, respect legitimate security concerns of all countries, end quote.
A variety of cities are claiming dollar stores target disenfranchised areas. Trimal Gomes has more on this story.
Dollar store chains are rapidly growing across the country with more locations than McDonald's, Starbucks, Target, and Walmart combined, according to a new report that claims their rapid growth is due in part to targeting low-income communities. The report from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance claims Dollar General and Dollar Tree, which owns Family Dollar, choose disenfranchised areas and Black and Latino neighborhoods in or near urban centers to set up shop. Aaron Weber is a concerned citizen in Micanopy, who says he fought a dollar store entering his community just based on what he claims to be plaguing America with increased risks of obesity, diabetes, and cancer.
They're a public health disaster from what they sell. I mean, I'd rather have a liquor store in my community than a dollar store, because liquor stores only sell alcohol, and dollar stores sell alcohol, plus a lot of processed foods, a lot of stuff that's high in sugar, cigarettes too.
These chains have become a go-to grocery destination for cash-strapped shoppers. Though Dollar Tree recently announced it will no longer sell eggs because the cost skyrocketed during the fall. In a statement, the Dollar General Corporation said the Institute is not a reliable source for information regarding Dollar General or our efforts to meet the value and convenience needs of millions of Americans for nearly 85 years. At the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, senior researcher Kennedy Smith says its investigation indicates the stores are a threat to existing businesses, especially food stores.
And the concern there is that by edging out stores that provide good, healthy food options for communities, they are actually creating food deserts or exacerbating food deserts that may already exist.
Dollar General says it offers fresh produce in more than 3,000 stores, with plans to do so in about 2,000 more this year. The company says its stores are often in locations that other retailers have chosen not to serve. Smith, however, describes tactics used to drive local grocers and retailers out of business. The report says since 2019, people in 75 cities and towns have organized to block new locations being built. This is Trimal Gomes for Florida News Connection.
By a 27-2 vote, the Oregon State Senate passed a law that would allow motorcyclists to travel between lanes of slow or stopped traffic. Senate Bill 422 would allow splitting on multi-lane highways when traffic has slowed to 10 miles per hour or less. Nicholas Harris is a representative for the American Motorcyclist Association. Harris wrote, quote, "Perhaps one of the more dangerous situations for any on-highway motorcyclist is being caught in congested traffic, where stop-and-go vehicles, distracted and inattentive vehicle operators, and environmental conditions pose an increased risk of physical contact with another vehicle or hazard," end quote. A similar bill passed both the Senate and House in 2021, but was vetoed by then-Governor Kate Brown. Current Governor Tina Kotek, then Speaker of the House, voted in favor of the bill. California, Montana, Utah, and Arizona all allow motorcyclist lane splitting under certain circumstances.
President Biden designates 500,000 acres of Nevada land as a new national monument. And the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs holds a roundtable discussion on the 2023 Farm Bill reauthorization in regard to Native priorities. With those stories and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. President Joe Biden on Tuesday designated Avi Kwame a sacred site in Nevada. Its name means Spirit Mountain and is a sacred landscape to indigenous people in Nevada and a number of other tribes. President Biden designated it as a traditional cultural property on the National Register of Historic Places in recognition of its religious and cultural importance. He made the announcement at a White House event.
Breathtaking deserts, valleys, mountain ranges, rich in biodiversity, sacred lands that are central to the creation story of so many tribes who have been here since time immemorial. Look, you know, it's a place of reverence, it's a place of spirituality, and it's a place of healing. And now it will be recognized for the significance it holds and be preserved forever, forever.
More than 500,000 acres of land will now be safeguarded as a national monument. Tribes across the country celebrated the news, including Chairman Timothy Williams from the Fort Mojave Indian Tribe, who introduced the president and thanked the White House for the designation. President Biden also on Tuesday awarded National Humanities Medals. A Native organization and a Native woman were among those honored. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
As Henrietta Mann likes to tell it, when she was working on her master's thesis, she wanted to write about Indians, but was told, no, you can't. Her advisor knew there were no Native American scholars to grade her. She made sure to change that, likely why the White House audience lavished the 88-year-old with a sustained ovation.
Henrietta Mann.
In 1986, the Bureau of Indian Affairs tapped Henrietta Mann to be the first Indian woman to direct Indian education programs. For 28 years, she was a professor of Native American Studies at the University of Montana. She's also the endowed chair in Native American Studies at Montana State University, Bozeman.
As a teacher, a scholar, and a leader, she's dedicated her career to Native American education and to establishing the field of Native American Studies.
Our sister public radio program, Native America Calling, was honored for starting and sustaining a dialogue with often overlooked voices from across Indian country. President Biden says the program has helped bring Indian country to life for millions, even as it's also served as a digital gathering place for Native Americans and Alaska Natives.
Every day, from a studio in New Mexico, Native American Calling airs a podcast, live radio show, exploring everything from the legacy of Native newspapers to Native cuisine to Native American solidarity with Ukraine, capturing the vastness of the Native American life and its profound impact on the country.
In the 90s, the One-of-a-Kind Native program started broadcasting to just 14 stations. It's now on 139 stations, including many large, non-Native outlets. President Biden also bestowed medals on the likes of musician Bruce Springsteen, fashion designer Vera Wang, actor Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and singer Gladys Knight. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Native America Calling is owned by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, which also owns National Native News. On Wednesday, the U.S. Committee of Indian Affairs will have a roundtable discussion in Washington, D.C. regarding the Native priorities for the 2023 Farm Bill reauthorization. U.S. Senator Brian Schatz, chairman of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, vice chairman of the committee, will lead the discussion. A number of representatives for tribal food and agriculture programs are expected to testify. Tribal leaders from across the country are advocating for the passage of the Farm Bill, which they say helps fund many important programs in Indian country. I'm Jill Freitas.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael's many worries are bubbling over.
It's spring, but instead of flowers popping, it could be bubbles. The banking bubble is wobbling. Local banks connected to global banks and are already teetering on bankruptcy. Federal government is going to bail out speculative banks and insider trading executives. The Ukraine war bubble's been too consistent for too long. Time for something fairly destructive and wider spread. Whether intentional or not, won't take much, such a tense and tattered bubble. I can't call Trump a bubble, more like a blistery sore about to pop, and who knows what vulgarity will ooze out. A flotilla of pustular cases lining up at the courts. Will there ever be a shortage of lawyers or close to enough public defenders? And the bubbles of American exceptionalism, American quote-unquote democracy, the attainable American dream. Let's get back to bubbles and beverages, soap bubbles shimmering in sunlight. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Mike Moen, Mark Moran, and Trimmel Gomes. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Ashley Mackey. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 8, it's Sojourner Truth Radio. At 9, it's Eco Justice Radio. At 10, it's Radio Eco Shock. And then at 11, it's Jonesy. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.